Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
Yeah, the jobs have been gone now for 25 years and nothing's replaced them. And they've gone through the Clinton administration and the Bush administration, and each successive administration has said that somehow these communities are going to regenerate, and they have not. It's not surprising then that they get better and they cling to guns or religion or antipathy toward people who aren't like them, or anti-immigrant sentiment, or anti-trade sentiment.
That's Barack Obama in 2008 speaking to a group of donors in San Francisco. A quote that would haunt him for the next 8 years. People clinging to, well, it became their guns, their God. And he had a hard time living that one down. He was observing something that has become a common observation, sadly, among the ruling classes about people who feel disenfranchised. Now, I know from my perspective that I saw the election results coming about 15 minutes before I actually realized what was going on. It took me a long time to see it coming, and by the time I saw it coming, it had already arrived. A lot of people are in the same boat. Very few people saw it coming. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be talking about election results from a never-Trump perspective. Dr. Frank Beckwith joins us. He's a visiting professor of conservative thought and policy for the University of Colorado, professor of philosophy and church-state studies at Baylor University, and author of several books, including Politics for Christians, Statecraft as Soulcraft. Dr. Beckwith, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, thanks for having me.
Speaking for yourself, why didn't you see this coming?
You know, I think it has a lot to do with, I think, cultural differences that I think have been moving in a particular direction for the past 15 or 20 years. And one of the things that I really struck me, something that I was actually talking to my brother about on the phone the night of the election, is how the lives that a lot of us live, especially those of us that are professionals, that occupy positions at different sorts of institutions. We may be in business or education or in the tech industry or so forth. We've been largely insulated from the lives of most ordinary, non-college educated Americans. And I think what we saw Tuesday night, especially the movement of votes towards Trump in Wisconsin, Ohio, Michigan, and Iowa and Pennsylvania, is that those people have been suffering. And this is why I'm glad you played that tape of the Obama's speech to his donors. I mean, he recognized that 8 years ago. And those people voted for him, mostly, the last two elections. He lost some of them in 2012. But I think what happened Tuesday was they are just sick and tired of being sort of left out. And I think for the first time, we actually see non-college educated whites voting like a minority bloc.
Why is it that it's not accurate to say this is just about angry white men?
I don't think it's accurate because there's a reality there. That is, people are in fact suffering. Many places have lost industry over the past 15, 20 years. You have the dissolution of families, in some cases as a result of drug abuse, prescription pharmaceuticals. I mean, there's an opiate crisis in this country that is ignored, and it's in these communities, and it's something that, you know, I knew about, but it wasn't until, you know, earlier this week, which, you know, it explained to me why people gravitated to this man, and it's somebody who I you know, I did not support myself, but I think I understand much better now. And I think, you know, the accusation of racism and so forth, I think is just a cheap slur that people who don't want to face this reality simply appeal to. You know, it's easy, right? I mean, especially when, you know, when you're sort of surrounded by people already agree with you, nobody holds you accountable for it. And of course, these people can't defend themselves. And here comes Donald Trump, and he says, I'll stand by you. I will be your advocate. And, you know, that's, I think, one of the reasons why, maybe the main reason why we saw the incredible election returns on that Tuesday night. I still can't believe it.
So let's talk a little bit about the fact that perhaps unwittingly he tapped into something. You said Obama saw it, you know, 8 years ago. He saw it quite clearly. He unwittingly tapped into this, kind of a genius by accident, something along these lines.
Yeah. I think that Donald Trump is a kind of like an idiot savant. you know, there's some people that just have a natural sort of gift, and I think he can, you know, he's the kind of guy that probably can walk into a room and sense who he should talk to. You know, there's just people like that, and I think he has that sense in terms of what people want to hear and where to go to get the attention. You know, and it does make him a kind of genius, I guess. But yeah, Obama saw it 8 years ago. I think the other thing that's happened in the past 8 years is that a lot of people who voted for Obama would never have predicted in 2008 what has transpired in this country in terms of the decrease of good race relations, the continued use of the federal government to, you know, employ, you know, politically correct rules. So a lot of people, you know, for the past couple of years, especially in these parts of the country, I just sense this radical shift. And I think that we saw Tuesday night what happened.
Was no one else that would have ordinarily had some sympathy for those kind of voters, was no one else paying attention or hearing them or getting their message?
I don't think anyone was paying attention. I think in some ways, a lot of the people running take them for granted. So I suspect that Hillary Clinton thought that these voters were in the bag. I mean, I found out just, I think, earlier today that she had not campaigned in Wisconsin in the last 3 weeks, the last month, and nobody, none of her representatives were there as well. Which means that they thought, oh, we're just going to win this. So, and I think that's probably probably the case in Michigan as well. I mean, Michigan's another shock. Now they campaigned there, but not as forcefully. And what the Trump people did, which they were, it's interesting to mention this. They were kind of ridiculed by professional political consultants, but they actually targeted specific counties and neighborhoods. and I think they knew. Who they were going to get. And you know, it's interesting to think, I have several friends, we've been talking last couple of days about, well, what would have happened if, let's say, a Ted Cruz or a Marco Rubio or even a Jeb Bush had run. I suspect that one of them, they would have probably won the popular vote, but it's not clear that they would have won the Electoral College. So, yes, I think those other candidates may have gotten more votes, but it's not clear whether that would have been enough for them to get Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania.
I remember when Barack Obama was elected in 2008, the expectations placed on him, although vague, were very, very high.
Yeah.
And of course, anyone knowing anything about American politics realized that no president, no matter how able or well-meaning, could possibly live up to those kinds of, albeit vague, expectations. What about President Trump? Can he become a victim of kind of ambiguous and very high expectations?
Yeah, I mean, I think the difference is that with Obama, there was almost like a messiah complex. Not by him necessarily, but I think in terms of the way people perceived him. But I think with Trump, you have I mean, he's made specific claims. I think some of them are going to be very difficult for him to fulfill, but others are going to be relatively easy. So, for example, he says he wants to put in conservative judges and justices to the federal courts. Well, I think that he can accomplish that very quickly and point to that. So he will select the replacement for Justice Scalia. And I have no doubt that he's going to pick someone that is a clear, recognizable conservative. I mean, he has the Senate, majority in the Senate, and if he does it in his first 30 days, which is typically referred to as a part of the honeymoon period for a new president, I think that'll be relatively easy to do. The dismantling of Obamacare, that's going to be a little bit more difficult. His wanting to provide federal funding for infrastructure, that I think would be relatively easy, and I think he'll get bipartisan support for that. When we move to, let's say, trade policy, that's going to be a little bit more difficult because you're going to have both Republicans and Democrats not on his side. On the other hand, you'll have Republicans and Democrats on his side, so it may very well turn out to be on issues like that that he may actually win over a lot of the sort of Bernie Sanders types. So, yeah, I think there's going to be some things that are going to be relatively easy for him to do. And I actually think if I had to give him advice, I would say that in your inaugural speech, outline, say that you're going to do these five or six things in 90 days, but pick ones that are really easy. And then it becomes, then people would begin to trust him. I think something else that also I think that he can do relatively easy that would actually please many people who are conservative Christians is to make sure that the administrative agencies of the federal government, the HHS, the IRS, these administrative agencies that have been employed to obstruct people's religious liberty. It's very easy for him. He's the chief executive. He should have no problem, for example, getting rid of the HHS mandate, telling the Department of Education to not apply Title IX to gender issues or gender dysmorphia issues. So I think those are, if he does those in the first 90 days, I know a lot of conservatives are going to be very happy.
I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're speaking with Dr. Frank Beckwith of Baylor University. In about 5 minutes, we'll talk with former U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese about the Supreme Court post-election. Dr. Beckwith, he ran tapping into a sizable frustration in the American people. Presidents can't tap into frustration. They can't afford to do it. And he ran as an outsider. Presidents are the ultimate center of the inside in U.S. politics. So how does he make that transition?
Yeah, well, I think he began on a good note for his acceptance speech that he gave Tuesday evening, where he seemed magnanimous, conciliatory, and went out of his way to reach out to those who didn't support him. In fact, I think what would really go a long way is if he, let's say, chose people to be in his administration who are actually publicly never Trumpers. I'm not sure all of them would accept, but I do think he would go along. It would really go to healing not only the rift in the country, but in the Republican Party. And having said that, I think that there could be places in administration for people that are Democrats. And of course, there he has to be very careful. He has to worry about, certain policy prescriptions. But you're right. A president cannot be. The president has to be the president of all the American people. And I think one of the reasons why there was such a resistance against Clinton in terms of certain segments of the American public was precisely because it seemed as though she was adversarial. In fact, when she made the comment in September that half of Trump's supporters could be put in a basket of deplorables, I was astonished that a presidential candidate would actually say that about half of the people supporting her opponent, some of whom, who knows, could have changed their minds, right? And I think that's what people don't want.
So with only about 30 seconds here, it sounds like you're asking him to take a page from Lincoln to form a team of rivals, maybe even former competitors. About 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think that's right. I am suggesting that. The question is, does Donald Trump have the temperament to be able to handle that? And there are signs from the way he campaigned and some of the things that he has said that he's not a very disciplined person when it comes to his temperament. And I just pray that that change, and perhaps the gravity of the office can change him. And I hope so in that regard. And, you know, as with any of our leaders, I pray that God be with him and guide him for the good of the country.
Dr. Frank Beckwith is visiting professor of conservative thought and policy for the University of Colorado, professor of philosophy and church-state studies at Baylor University, and author of several books, including Politics for Christian Statecraft as Soulcraft. You can read it and purchase it under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Beckwith, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
On the other side of the break, it's the Supreme Court of the United States post-election. Ed Meese will join us, 75th Attorney General of the United States, Ronald Reagan Distinguished Fellow Emeritus for the Heritage Foundation. Stay tuned.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, ad crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.